Hello once again, everybody, and thank you for joining me here on this Thursday, December 19th edition of Bang the Book Radio. My name is Adam Burke, your host for the next 45 minutes or so. Let's go over all kinds of things in the world of sports from a betting focus. Happy to have you with me as one guest joins me on the program today. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. We'll go over the upcoming bowl games, take a look at the overall bowl picture, see if we've got any new positions to discuss with you, then also take a look at some matchups here in week 16 of the NFL season. Over at bangthebook.com, we got bowl previews on just about all these bowl games. I've got two of the New Year's Day bowl games done here this morning. Only have about eight or nine left of those to post. So you can check those out over at the website with all the bowl game previews for you here for this college football bowl season. Still doing NFL weekly stuff. Still doing daily NHL, NBA, and college basketball. UFC event this weekend, soccer previews up for you over there. And then after the new year, golf will return in February. NASCAR comes back. We cover all of it over at bangthebook.com, your one-stop shop for sports betting news and information. Finally, as you know, this and every edition of Bang the Book Radio presented by our friends over at DSI Sportsbook. BTB and the number 200 is that promo code. 100% deposit match bonus for the sportsbook. 100% deposit match bonus for the live casino at BetDSI. It's only a game until you bet it. One guest, lots of stuff to talk about, though, here on today's show. That is professional handicapper Brad Powers from bradpowersports.com. Brad, how's it going today, brother?
Man, it's going well. How are you doing on this fine Thursday?
Very well, buddy. Appreciate your time, as always, here, man. Thank you so much for joining me. And before we get into the games we're going to go in-depth on for this show, that's the Friday bowl game, Saturday, Monday, and then on into Tuesday with the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve. As we look at the overall bowl picture here, Brad, not a whole lot of line movement out there, kind of in a holding pattern on a lot of these games that are a week or more out into the future. But any new positions you're kind of looking at, any news or anything that's, you know, kind of stood out to you?
I mean, more and more players obviously sitting. You got to keep an eye on that. I mean, I would say one that's caught my eye in particular might not move it because DeAndre Swift's going to play the running back for Georgia, but now they're going to be without three starting offensive linemen for Georgia, and you got a Baylor team that can get after the quarterback a little bit. So that would certainly be one, and it shows me even after last year's debacle in the Sugar Bowl, my main question was, would Georgia allow it to happen again? I'm just not sure how interested they are. I mean, with the fact that three starting offensive linemen are going to sit that one out. I mean, that's certainly one where I went from a position thinking, yeah, I was going to maybe possibly lean Georgia, but just because of the overall talent edges and disparities there. But at this point, not so much.
Have you seen anything about Charlie Brewer? Is he going to be good to go?
I thought it was just a concussion. So, I mean, I don't want to obviously downplay, you know, CTE and all that stuff, but I think he'll be ready to go. And all right. I mean, let's face it, Gary Bohannon didn't look too bad, the backup, and then the third string guy didn't look too bad. I mean, I had Oklahoma, and you think when you're down to a third string quarterback, you can cover a game. And obviously Matt Rule is a pretty good coach.
Yeah, it certainly looks that way. And again, I mean, there are a lot of dominoes to potentially fall with Matt Rule here too, especially as the NFL regular season comes to a close.
He may be a guy
that, you know, NFL teams are looking at, and certainly can't blame them for that. That line is down to 6.5. Couple of sixes popping as well with Georgia. Again, questions about their motivation and the offensive lineman situation. Anything else? I mean, I'm looking up and down the board. I mean, yeah, there's a couple guys sitting out on Alabama's defense, but if all their offensive players play, I'm not sure Michigan has a great time trying to stop them.
I agree.
I mean, I don't know, man. It's just a wait and see type of thing right now, I guess.
It is. I mean, the Arizona State, Florida State game, I had a ton of guys sitting out that one. I mean, on the Arizona State side, their top wide receiver, Iuka is out, you know, Benjamin's out. And then on the other side, you got Cam Akers out, the best running back for Florida State. So if anything there, maybe that gets me more position. I mean, who are you going to be your playmakers in that game? So to me, maybe that's more of an under position in the Sun Bowl between Florida State and Arizona State. Some of the bigger news, I mean, Oklahoma suspending three guys. I'm actually more concerned, if you're going to ask me if it's Clyde Allaire for LSU, who got a little bit banged up with a hamstring, who am I more concerned about, the three guys for Oklahoma or the one guy, you know, one of the best running backs in the country for LSU. Probably, Clyde moves it a little bit more than those Oklahoma players. So another wait and see game coming up next Saturday. And it looks, you know, there hasn't been after some early movement in the marketplace that, you know, opening Monday, Tuesday. I mean, it's been, I think I'm not the only one taking more of a wait and see approach to what's going on.
Yeah. And the thing about Edwards-Helaire too, is that he's a pretty good pass catcher out of the backfield.
Oh,
too.
Yeah.
So that's an important thing here too. It's not just being a 1300 yard rusher, you know, with 6.5 yards per carry. It's also that he's got 50 receptions on the season. So, you know, that's something that does kind of hurt LSU's offense a little bit. Not to the point where they're probably going to lose this game. But again, keep in mind, we're talking about them trying to cover 13, 13 and a half, 14 points. You know, you'd certainly like to have all your weapons at that point. I'm glad you mentioned the Sun Bowl, because actually I went ahead and took a position on Florida State in that game.
And yeah.
I think it's one of those, first of all, my line's about Arizona State -3, giving them a point of home field just because they're more accustomed to the elevation in El Paso, much shorter trip, stuff like that. I just don't know if Herm Edwards is real invested in this game. You know, he's been talking about trying to secure their recruiting class, which obviously they did yesterday. His defensive coordinator just left for the New Mexico job.
Yep.
He fired his offensive coordinator. So he was talking, I read some press clippings from him about, well, you know, we're focused on our 2020 class. We're focused on building our coaching staff. Doesn't seem to me like he's all that worried about the bowl game. Florida State played for Odell Haggins 2 years ago as an interim. They seem to be really positive and seem to really like Mike Norvell. So I went ahead and took a position there on Florida State. I think I got him +4.5, I believe.
Yeah, I you're not going to get disagreement with me. My number is closer to the 3 range for him, even factoring what you did there. And it makes sense to me. It's just, I mean, Florida State offensively, I'm a little worried about without Cam Akers, who did this year, you know, put forth, you know, an effort. I know he's sitting out the bowl game, but he certainly didn't quit throughout the course of the season, even on a team that was 6-6. Yeah, I can see it. Tough for me is, you know, Jaden Daniels, I think, I mean, can grow a little bit in 15 extra practices for him. I mean, I think that's a future superstar for Arizona State. So that would be the only thing, you know, holding me back from making a big bet on Florida State, but certainly I lean that way.
All right, so we can end the speculation with some of these bowl games that are further in advance, and obviously we'll have a bunch of them to talk about on next Thursday's segment with Brad. We'll have to probably pick and choose a little bit which games we want to get to, because there's only so much time in the segment here, but we can start looking at some of these games that are coming up very, very quickly. We start with game 201, 202 down in the Bahamas. This one's been moving on Buffalo up from 4.5 to 6.5. Total been crushed down from 57 to 51.5 with some weather considerations for this game. I think we may have touched on this one a little bit last week, maybe talking over some of the things we talked about last week, but what's your, any thoughts, any position on this Bahamas Bowl?
Under for me, you know, I mean, when you got like historic type winds, we're talking 20 sustained 25, 30 mile an hour, certainly that can impact it. I mean, really all you need to impact the game is, I mean, the sweet spot, I think, is when you're starting like at 13 miles an hour wind. So, I mean, certainly that's going to impact, in my opinion, Charlotte a little bit more than Buffalo. Why? Buffalo is so much more dependent on the ground. I mean, they got not one but 2,000 yard rushers led by Jarrett Patterson. So I think the weather would certainly impact Charlotte a little bit more. So in that regard, lean Buffalo for me, but I took a position on the under.
Did you get way out in front of it with the weather?
I didn't. I mean, okay. Just when you're doing different sports, you got a daily radio show, missed it. I mean, they got hit pretty good quick fashion. That didn't take too long.
Yeah, it did. I mean, you know, this is, it's tough because I kind of liked Charlotte. I liked Charlotte a little bit, 5.5. When this got up to 7, I obviously liked them a little bit more.
Yeah.
Just couldn't lock it in because, you know, as you said, I mean, Charlotte is more multidimensional on offense than Buffalo is. Buffalo runs the football very well. Charlotte actually had a higher number of yards per carry, but they need the pass to offset the run a little bit, whereas Buffalo can just kind of run it down your throat and sort of wear you down a little bit. And that's a concern for me with Charlotte here in what will probably be a little bit of a humid environment. You know, obviously we haven't seen a lot of humidity since early in the year. Kind of worried about them getting worn down some here. And again, that's why it's tough to take some of these early positions, because the handicap for the game can change, you know, on a daily or an hourly basis.
It certainly can, because, I mean, the news you're getting isn't, I mean, in many cases, is really significant. So, I mean, you always run that risk. You would think in bowl games you don't have to worry about weather as much, just because it played in mainly the Sun Belt states and a lot of dome atmospheres. But this is one where, you know, I was actually leaning more towards the over, to be perfectly frank with you, because I just think both teams offensively, if it was played in good conditions, could take advantage of the opponent's defense. So, just the one single factor that you know, didn't really become known until a few days ago. And I mean, it's still weather. I mean, you really don't know until you're going to flip on the game. I mean, anything is possible in that regard, but yeah, just one single factor can impact your handicap, and you know, and completely flip it upside down.
Well, we thought we had one of those factors here in game 203-204 between Kent State and Utah State out in the Frisco Bowl. Jordan Love and two other players, including a starting running back for Utah State, popped for misdemeanor marijuana possession, but now they're going to actually play here in the bowl game. So this line did come down off of 7, got way down there. This one got crushed down into the, what, 4.5, 5 range before coming back up now that Jordan Love and the other guys are expected to play here. So now we're sitting 6.5, 67.5 on the total.
I'm going to lean Kent State. I mean, my power ratings don't call for it. I mean, power ratings for me are more in the 7.5 range. But to me, okay, they're going to play. But, I mean, they got busted. Correct me if I'm wrong. They got busted after they traveled to the bowl site. So, to me, regardless of your position on pot, and I mean, come on, at this point in today's day and age, I mean, it's really nothing. But to me, it signifies, you know, how locked in, how motivated are you? And in Jordan Love's case, a guy who, you know, last week declared that he's going to leave early for the NFL draft. That's your next news cycle. That's what you want out there. I'm already, you, Jordan Love, I'm speaking, that's had, in my opinion, a very, very disappointing season already. I just think Kent State, who hasn't been, you know, that's only their second bowl game since 1972. I'm a big fan of Sean Lewis. Dustin Crum, unlike Jordan Love, takes care of the football. He's only thrown 2 picks on the season. Love's thrown 16. Give me Kent State.
Well, and that's the question, right? Is, you know, guy declares for the draft, gets popped with, you know, possession. I don't know how much the NFL necessarily cares. Obviously, the optics for him aren't great. But you could also look at this and say, okay, well, now he's got something to make amends for. Now he can go out there and, you know, be laser focused, really try to put up some big numbers on what is a bad Kent State defense. So there are two different ways of looking at it. I'm not sure which way I want to look at it, but I understand your point saying, you know, if the quarterback and the leader of this team is out there not taking this game seriously, what is the rest of the team doing? You can also say on the other side, well, now he's got even more to prove than he previously did. I think this game's just an altogether stay away for me.
Yeah, I mean, not a high-value pick for me. When I'm saying lean, I'm talking pizza money here. But, you know, I'll say this. See, I have a disagreement with some people. Oh, they're not going to take the game seriously. I think once the game kicks off, you have to take it seriously. I mean, football is a very violent sport. If you're, you know, lackadaisical, I mean, you're going to get hurt. I mean, that's just the thing. Where I think, you know, what happens is when motivation comes into play, I think it's in the preparation. How much are you paying attention? And to me, I think that's already been compromised here, the preparation leading up to the game. Once the game kicks off, I mean, you got to be at least locked in. I mean, maybe the quarterback, because it's more mental than a lot of the other ones, maybe is and it's not as physical at the point of attack, say at the line of scrimmage. But I think when I'm always talking about lack of motivation, I always think it impacts the practices. And you know, the meetings and the lack of attention to detail, to me, that it gets impacted there, the preparation leading the game than the actual game itself.
Well, and something else I thought about, and again, obviously we're spending a little bit more time than I expected on this game, but something else I thought about is, you know, Utah State's passing attack has already been down from last year. It's already very watered down. And one of the things you look at in these bowl games, typically a lot of people like to back teams that can run the football and play defense, because you don't worry about your timing in the running game. In the passing game, you have to worry about your timing. You've got to try and be, you know, locked in with your receivers. And that's why a lot of these early bowl games tend to go over, because, you know, you've got a shorter period of time in between games. But with Utah State, a passing attack that already underachieved this season, what is it going to look like here in this game? And if they can't move the football through the air, that opens the door for Kent State, not just to cover, but maybe pull the outright too.
You bring up another good point, and I'll make it quick. I mean, if you're looking to back these dogs in bowl season, because there's so much variance, and I think a couple of guys, I think at Bet Labs did some good study and work here. I mean, the point spread comes into play like one out of four times, as far as, you know, dogs are actually one out of four times in bowl games. Hold on, I got this totally backwards. One out of four times in the regular season, the point spread comes into play. In the postseason, the point spread only comes into play one out of seven times. So, to me, if you're looking to back these dogs, you know, don't be afraid to put a little bit on the money line, because oftentimes the dog just doesn't cover. The dog goes ahead and wins the game outright. So, that's an important lesson. I'm sorry. I got a little choppy there.
No, it's all good. And again, what we mean by the point spread matters is the favorite wins, but the dog covers.
Yes, essentially, absolutely.
You know what that comes down to, because the spread doesn't matter if the favorite wins comfortably, and it doesn't matter if the dog wins outright, then, you know, all numbers win. So basically that's what we're talking about here. If the favorite wins and the dog covers, that's something that doesn't happen a whole lot here in the bowl season. As Brad just mentioned, one out of every seven times, which is certainly a pretty interesting statistic there. We talked a lot about the New Mexico Bowl last week on the show, Central Michigan, San Diego State. We got a little bit of a side bet on it. So in the interest of time, we'll bypass that game here. If you want to hear our thoughts on it, go back to last week's show. Still plenty relevant with none of the bowl games having kicked off yet. Liberty and Georgia Southern here in the Cure Bowl. Interesting line move here. The total going up to as high as 59 from the opener of 56.5, and the line coming down from Liberty plus 6 to pretty much plus 4 or minus, well, yeah, plus 4 market wide. Do have some extra juice on some of the minus 4s out there on the Georgia Southern side. What does Brad Powers think about this one?
Lean Liberty for me. I'm worried about, they really didn't play that much of a schedule this year, obviously, Liberty, and didn't beat a lot of decent teams. But, you know, I just think obviously they're going to be excited to be there. Why? It's their first bowl game in school history. You got a head coach in Hugh Freeze that's been there, done that. As far as bowl games, Stephen Calvert and Antonio Gandy-Golden, I mean, have been multiple-year starters for them. I think they're rock solid, at least offensively. Now, I get it, Georgia Southern runs a unique offense, but having a little bit extra time to prepare for it, I think advantage Liberty there. Lean for me on Liberty.
I'm going to give you a homework assignment for next week. I'm hoping you can find some data for us. If you can't, I completely understand. I'm curious how the option teams do in bowl games. Because, you know, as we've talked about before, you know, if you play an option team 6 days after playing somebody else, it's very difficult to get ready for that scheme. Now, conventional wisdom would say if you've got a lot of time to prepare, you know, you should be better equipped for the option. But some of these teams, I think the Cheez-It Bowl is a perfect example here. I love this game. Washington State and Air Force. How in the hell is Washington State supposed to simulate the option in practice? I mean, they just can't, not with an air raid type of system that they recruit for. Liberty, probably a little bit easier for them to do it just because, you know, the recruiting pool that they kind of look to pick from and that they get to pick from. But that's something that's kind of interesting to me, is that we would think that lots of time to prep for the option is good. But on the other hand, I mean, your practice squad, your young guys, your underclassmen sure as hell aren't going to have it polished. So I'm kind of wondering about that a little bit.
Yeah, I will be able to get it, and I'm actually going to try to do it during the segment, to be honest. I'm going to try to multitask.
All right. Well, yeah. I mean, by now you should be a pretty good multitasker, right?
You'd think.
Yeah, I mean.
Navy's good. Oh, no, I don't know if this is. Yeah, I mean, Navy's 12-4 against the spread. I'm going back to 1980. Okay. And they've covered 5 straight bowl games. So. Yeah. Let me, we're just going to do this on the fly. I'm sorry, show takeover. Although I'm going to give you a compliment as I'm doing it. Army 6-2. That's a positive.
Yeah.
So what we got, 12-4, 6-2. That's pretty good.
Yeah. 18-6. Not bad.
Yeah. And Air Force. I got to get it here. I'm going to be perfectly frank. I'm going to give some people some grief, even though I, you know, love their website and use it a lot. Some of the abbreviations for these teams just don't make any sense here on the Killer Sports database. Air Force 15-8. So we're talking, what is that, like 67%?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Spread. That the service academies, obviously, you know, I think Georgia Tech was probably 50-50 proposition under Paul Johnson in bowl games. Last year wasn't a good look, but certainly you're making money. So, all right.
Well,
I'm glad I looked that up.
And I guess something that's kind of interesting, you know, you talk about Georgia Tech, and I mean, and, you know, the ACC kind of faces a lot of other Power 5 conference teams, whereas the service academies are going to wind up playing, you know, group of five schools more often than not. So maybe it's a talent thing, you know, with something like a Georgia Tech or somebody like that, you know, I mean, I don't know. I guess it's a pretty interesting.
No, you bring up an excellent point. I mean, you got more versatility maybe in your roster, more talent. I mean, you got more assistant coaches, more personnel that can, you know, get after it. Yeah, I'm going to have to, it might require a deeper dive if we're looking at, you know, how does the service academies and option teams do against Power 5 teams? I mean, that's an excellent point. That's about as sharp as it gets, man. That's why I do this show.
I try. I mean, I try to be as sharp as I can. I got to live up to all the guests that I have on the show here. So, you know, I try to come up with these things a little bit, and I'm glad that one kind of worked out so I didn't sound like a dumbass on today's show. All right, let's go to Boca, which actually sounds like a good idea as I look outside right now. Game 211-212, SMU, Florida Atlantic. I think we talked about this one last Thursday as well. Again, I don't understand why this line isn't higher. I know SMU is the better team. SMU played the better schedule. Everybody's on SMU. It feels, I haven't talked to anybody that likes Florida Atlantic yet. I don't know what's going on with this. Why isn't this line going up?
Yeah. I mean, that's the worry. It's not coming off a three. I thought it would. So, I'm one of those SMU guys. So, I mean, I got a big bet, biggest bet of the early bowl seasons on SMU for me. I thought it'd go higher. It hasn't, so that's certainly a concern. But, you know, sometimes paralysis by overanalysis, sometimes you overthink it, and, you get worried. Forget about it. I'm letting it ride. There's nothing that I've read so far this week that doesn't have me, you know, rethinking my SMU position here.
No, and it's always interesting, too, you know, the argument of, well, FAU already has Willie Taggart, so the new head coach is in place. I don't know if that's a positive or a negative. I think it's a case-by-case basis type of thing. I think for Florida State, because, you know, Mike Norvell was there were so many positive comments about Mike Norvell. And, you know, I mean, obviously did a great job at Memphis. Florida State's very excited to have him. Willie Taggart, it seems like he largely got hired because of his recruiting ties in Florida, maybe not so much because of his in-game coaching ability. I haven't seen – maybe it's just because Florida State's a much larger name program – I haven't seen any overwhelming excitement about the Taggart hire.
Well, I think I'll have to dive in a little bit deeper to the actual player comments. I mean, I think there's a lot of people that weren't, you know, overly, you know, doing cartwheels over the hire from, you know, an outside perspective. I mean, people that just cover the game. So, you know, it was certainly not a good look for Taggart at Florida State the last couple of years. So, there is some concern there, but I haven't, you know, read specifically players' comments about the hire.
I mean, you're locked in anyway, and I'm locked in on SMU too, so I think you and I are just going to trust our handicaps here in this one. But that is always interesting. You know, the new guy is in place. What does that mean, you know, for his players that he'll have next year? Yeah, it's really tough to say. How about FIU and Arkansas State here, 213-214 in the Camellia Bowl. Arkansas State, 2.5-point favorite. This one did come off of three very early in the process, but hasn't really moved much, and neither has the total, anywhere from 62 to 62.5.
I'm going to take FIU here. This was a bet for me. You know, power ratings won. I think I got FIU favored, although you're not crossing through a key number at this point, crossing through zero. But you look at, you know, I just look at the coaching edge. Butch Davis is really good in bowl games, 7-2, and that's against the spread. Arkansas State, Blake Anderson, not so much, 1-4. I think FIU would be motivated. You know, they even won a game last year without their starting quarterback. James Morgan's going to be in place, should be motivated to play in this year's game. I'm on FIU.
I'm not really sure if I'm going to take Arkansas State here, but something that kind of crossed my mind a little bit, my line's 3.5 on the game, by the way, so getting a little bit of value there through that key number of 3. But one of the thoughts I had on the game, and again, obviously it's kind of a difficult thing to talk about, with such a hard year for this Arkansas State program, with the death of Wendy Anderson, Blake Anderson's wife, you know, how close she was with the program, how close the team got over the course of the season, I kind of feel like there's some extra incentive and motivation for them to finish out the year with a win, kind of try to, you know, just sort of tie this thing off as much as they can. So I think they'll be motivated. You know, I mean, I don't know if it's going to force me into a play, but again, these are all the different things that kind of factor into a bowl handicap.
Good point. Although, you know, I'm going back to it, and this will probably, you know, sound a little harsh, but I thought Georgia would take it easy on Arkansas State. Didn't. Went with, you know, all the fans dressing up in pink, laying with more than 35 points, and they go out there and humiliate Arkansas State. It's about finishing the season strong. Don't you think Arkansas State would have finished the regular season strong, lose outright as a double-digit favorite against a, you know, a one-win South Alabama team? So, I get all that emotional stuff and the whatnot, and I guess it could be a feel-good story, but my feel-good story is putting more money in my pocketbook personally. So I haven't seen a lot of buy signs from Arkansas State this year.
On the other hand, I mean, you know, Blake Anderson returns for the UNLV game, shows up in the preparations.
Oh, good call.
And they blew out UNLV. That was a late play that I made there in week two. And also, too, again, senior day on November 23rd, probably very emotional, probably had some kind of tribute, you know, for Wendy Anderson in that last home game. Short week turnaround to play South Alabama. You know, maybe that was just kind of a bad spot for Arkansas State. I'm kind of talking myself into this one where you and I may end up on opposite sides of this game. So if that winds up being the case, I'll let you know. We can do double or nothing on that New Mexico State game, or on the New Mexico Bowl game with Central Michigan and San Diego State. I believe we talked about Washington and Boise State last week, but we'll just kind of run through it again real quickly here. Anything change in your mind? I know you kind of liked Washington with the Chris Peterson angle. Any new thoughts on that bowl game to share?
Yeah, I mean, I did early, but then, I mean, here's one where I bet on, you know, Sunday, opening day, as far as the lines go. When the bowl games are announced, I bet Washington, but, you know, by the next day, Hunter Bryant, he's tight end, he's their leading receiver, left tackle Trey Adams, so they're going to skip out. The more I think about it, I'm certainly still with lean Washington, but it's not overwhelming. Just a lean, pizza money. For me, in the games we've talked about so far, if you're talking, you know, my real bets, SMU and FIU for me so far, the games we've done.
The one thing I started thinking about earlier on in the week, I guess I kind of want to get your take on this here too, is that I'm kind of talking myself into Boise State if I can find a 3.5 in this game, because I think Washington's playing with loads of pressure. And early on in these bowl games, teams don't play with a whole lot of pressure. That's why you get a lot of overs. You know, these teams, this is kind of one additional game for them. This isn't a marquee bowl game. This isn't anything that, you know, can change the direction of the program. Like, say, if Minnesota beat Auburn in the Outback Bowl, something like that. Washington, all of a sudden, an average-ish team. I mean, they're an above-average team, but they did lose 5 conference games. They're playing with pressure here now to send Chris Peterson out a winner, and Boise State can just go out there and play. And I wonder if that helps the Broncos a little bit here. And if I get the hook, I may put my money where my mouth is on this one.
There you go. I could see it. I mean, I can see it, and I'll more than likely than not, we'll see how the weather goes. It's been cold here. I'll probably go and see it personally. I think it's the best bowl game matchup, at least of the first, you know, 10, 12 games.
You mean it's not the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl between UAB and App State?
Yeah, no, definitely not that one.
App State 16.5, 17-point favorite. That one game 217, 218. Total coming down a little bit from 48 to 47.5. Is this just a massacre for App State, or can UAB use that defense and keep it close?
I lean towards UAB. I gotta think they put together a better performance than what they did in the Conference USA Championship game. I mean, I faded them in that game, and, you know, obviously that was a nice, easy winner, but I trust Bill Clark to at least get him rallied a little bit here. You know, Sean Clark's going to take over on the other side for App State. He was the offensive line coach this year. He's played for App State, so at least they have a little bit of stability in that regard. And the hope is that they got a longtime head coach instead of a guy like Eli Drinkwitz that's, you know, one and done. It does worry me that UAB, again, you know, but got a lot of their wins against one of the easiest schedules in the country. So that's a concern. But I went ahead and took the big dog, UAB, plus 16 and a half.
Yeah, it's tough, you know. I mean, because again, how many points does UAB need to score in order to cover this number? That's one of the big questions. And also, too, for App State here, you know, last year Scott Satterfield leaves, they have an interim, they go to the New Orleans Bowl and they crush Middle Tennessee State. They're back in the New Orleans Bowl again with an interim again. They miss out on that group of five New Year's Six bowl berth that goes to Memphis. Are they fully motivated here? I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, that's
sure.
A good point.
So, you know, I mean, does like an 80% motivated App State team still go and, you know, manhandle UAB? It's a possibility. I mean, this is a game that I think of all the games on Saturday, this is the one where I've got, you know, really the most tepid opinions on. I don't think I'm going to play this game at all.
Yeah, I don't have a bet. And you're right. I mean, App State, the reward for arguably the best season in not only school history, but I mean, we just look at AP poll rankings, the best season that any Sun Belt team's ever had. So, but yet your reward is going right back to the same place you played in last year. I will say last year I took a position against App State with Middle Tennessee in this bowl game, and that did not work out so well. And that Middle Tennessee team, in my opinion, certainly much better and more effective offensively than this UAB team. So a little bit of scared there, but you know, if you got questionable motivation, do you want to lay 16 and a half? I guess that's what it comes down to me.
No bowl games on Sunday. Obviously Sunday's for the NFL. We got one bowl game on Monday. It's the Bad Boy Mowers Gasparilla Bowl. Definitely one of the top bowl names. Although I think the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl has actually
overtaken. Tony the Tiger wins this year, especially the bowl logo.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, yeah, man. It's awesome. Right. You won't be disappointed.
I'm going to go look that one up. I did like the Cheez-Its Bowl logo. I thought that was pretty cool last year. So I guess I'll go check out this Tony the Tiger one here in a second.
It's great.
Oh, God.
Sorry, that's horrible.
I'm going to hang up on you. Yeah. That's bad. God. All right. So the Gasparilla Bowl here, Marshall and UCF, and I think the same things that kind of apply to App State, we can sort of mention here where – yeah, it wasn't a great season for Central Florida. Yeah, they weren't in consideration for any big bowl game or anything, but are they really going to be hyped up about being a 17.5-point favorite, not even leaving their home state to play Marshall?
Yeah, I like Marshall here. I bet Marshall. You know, I'm going to trust Doc Holliday, who's perfect as a bowl coach. He's 6-0 straight up. He's 6-0 against the spread, and I'm going to trust Marshall. I mean, they have 30 players. This is remarkable. 30 players on their roster from the state of Florida. I looked it up, counted it. 30 players on March. So we're talking, what, 35% of the roster is from the state of Florida. So I think they're plenty fired up as a big dog. They went to the blue turf as a big dog earlier this year. Weren't overly intimidated by another really good group of five team in Boise State. So, yeah, I think Marshall can hang within this big number here. I like Marshall. I bet Marshall.
By the way, the Tony the Tiger Sun Bowl logo is pretty badass. I will say that, even though you ruined it for me, is still pretty badass.
Sorry.
No, I agree with your take on Marshall. And in fact, that's something that I didn't even think about for this game here. And again, I mean, that's important too. Some of these destination bowls, in particular, the ones in Florida, you're going to wind up with a lot of players from there, you know, in a lot of these schools, because again, I mean, Florida, you know, probably the top high school football in the country, right up there with Texas, California, and so on. So, yeah, that's an excellent point there for Marshall. And I mean, Doc Holliday is a good bowl coach too. So, you know, I think this is one where it's big dog or nothing for me. UCF has the talent to really lay one on Marshall, I think, here. But, you know, Marshall's going to play the full 60 in this game, I think. And I don't know if that will be the case here for UCF in this one. So that is one I haven't taken a position on yet. Hasn't really moved much either. It's been 17.5. The total hasn't moved at all. Obviously, in Tampa, you could wind up getting some weather considerations, you know, so we'll see what happens.
That would help Marshall.
Yeah, it would. Yeah, it absolutely would. Yeah, so there's really no risk in betting Marshall early in the process here, is it?
Yeah.
Although it's not that early in the process anymore, I guess.
No, we're getting there now.
Well, let's go out to Hawaii, where, again, I would much rather be there than here. BYU and Hawaii in the SoFi Hawaii Bowl game, 221-222. Christmas Eve. So this one's a little bit of fun here as you're, you know, avoiding your family or whatever it is you do on Christmas Eve. BYU opened a 2.5-point favorite, down to 1.5 in some places to the prevailing number total up from 62 to 64. What do you think about this one?
Another tough one, man. I'll be perfectly frank. I love bowl games. And this is, you know, I think the 11th season going back to my Phil Steele days that, you know, I've actively handicapped all of the bowl games. And this is just one of the toughest ones from a pure handicapping aspect. I mean, I lean Hawaii. I wish I was getting three, obviously. I just don't think coming down the stretch, BYU's, you know, schedule was overly difficult. Specifically, if you look at some of the offenses they faced, I mean, at least I've seen Hawaii on this field. I mean, show up. I mean, beating, you know, an Arizona to start the season, beating what turned out to be a pretty good Oregon State team. You know, with everything on the line, they beat San Diego State. So at home, to easily dispatched Army when I thought Hawaii would have, you know, questionable motivation in that game. So I'll lean Hawaii. I mean, BYU wouldn't be stunned if BYU killed them, though, because BYU's been a very up and down team all year. I mean, I'm not a huge Kalani Sitake fan. I mean, when you're beating Tennessee and SC, but you're losing to Toledo and South Florida, I don't think that's over, you know, a great look. I know they had some quarterback injuries this year, but I think Rolovich is the better of the coach. I'm at home. I think Hawaii will be plenty motivated here. Lean Hawaii.
This one's tough for me. From a power rating standpoint, I've got BYU. I've got this one, even giving Hawaii a little bit of home field, I've got this one 5.5. So I'm definitely off. Yeah, I'm definitely off from the market here. You know, again, though, like you said, I mean, you've got Hawaii that's played well on this field. You've got BYU. You know, obviously there's some level of distraction going to playing a bowl game in Hawaii. I mean, you're in paradise. There's a bunch of stuff that goes on in the lead up to this football game. You mentioned Marshall and all the Florida-born players that they have. I actually figured BYU would have a few more Hawaiians on the roster, but they don't. They only have three. So that surprised me a little bit here. I figured you'd have some kids, you know, happy to go back and play in front of friends and family and stuff like that. But only three of them there for BYU. The one thing else, a couple of things I'll say about this game. One, we know Hawaii turns the football over a ton. So BYU should get some extra possessions here. Two, BYU's been a lot better with Zach Wilson at quarterback. And they've kind of been in and out over the course of the season. Seems like he should be good to go here in this bowl game. So at least they'll have that. And if he's not effective, they can go to Baylor Romney or somebody else. So I think BYU is in a pretty good state from a health standpoint, but Hawaii going for 10 wins, bowl game at home, Rolovich seems like a pretty good motivator. It should be a play. You're absolutely right. But again, during the bowl season, so many other considerations to take into account.
Agree. Although Zach Wilson, that BYU offense didn't look good in the finale with them under center against San Diego State. That was a feeble effort there.
Yeah, it was. No, you're absolutely right. So, again, I mean, a lot of considerations, especially in these early bowl games where, you know,
unbelievable to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's so many that, you know, this is probably, you know, since I moved to Vegas and now this is the fourth year, I usually fire 10, 12 bowl games and feel super confident that I have some really great bets. Not the case this year. Three or four compared to the 10 or 12 I have had in past years.
And again, I mean, we'll see what happens as these lines start to move. I mean, you know, obviously limits start very low on these games and they start to amp up as we get to game week and then within a couple of days of the game and, you know, all that. So we should start to see a lot more movement, not just on this round of games that we talked about, but also going into next week. It will be game week for, you know, the weekend bowls, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Limits are going to increase. Lines are going to start to move. We're going to get a clearer picture of what, you know, some of the sharp and public positions are on these bowl games here. So with that, we transition over to the NFL side of the spectrum to finish out this segment here, Brad. And we start with some Saturday NFL here, the middle of the day game, 4:53, 4:54, Buffalo and New England. And this line's starting to come down a little bit. Some of those 6.5s going away. A lot of sixes showing up now with the Bills getting some road love going up to Foxborough.
Yeah, and you're also seeing the total go down, too. So, I mean, tough to lay near a touchdown when you got one of the lower totals of the entire season. And, I mean, it's tough to get margin on Buffalo. I mean, it's a team that the unders cast 11 of their 14 games so far. And, you know, the Patriots got a six-point win at Buffalo earlier this season. But, I mean, statistically speaking, Buffalo was the far superior team, 23-11 first down edge, 375, 224 yard edge in that one. But, I mean, I get it. Tom Brady's got five consecutive games with a QBR of less than 40. But, man, the Patriots are coming off a home loss, a rare one. I mean, I cannot fade them against at home. I mean, since 2013, they've covered nearly 70% of their home games coming off a home loss. I can't do it. So I'll wait and see if I can get, you know, maybe even a number of less than six, I'm hoping. Maybe I can get a 5.5. I would lean Patriots, and I'd lean under.
I like Buffalo in this game, I think. I don't know if I'm going to use it in the contest. I'm not going to bet it personally. I'm looking at it more in terms of a contest pick for the Circa or the Super Contest. But, I mean, look, you know, it's really, really difficult for the Patriots to get margin. Unless they've got a really lopsided turnover margin, it's hard for them to do it. Right. And in that first game against Buffalo, you know, they win by six. They're plus +3 in turnover margin. Had a blocked punt that basically won the game for them. You know, just too many things.
Good coach teams do that, though. That's the thing. Yeah. I mean, turnovers are you know, obviously mostly random, but are they with New England, who continues to you know, outside of the box score, exceed expectations? I mean, we're talking two decades now. I mean, were you that surprised that they, you know, easily beat Cincinnati because of turnovers? I mean, they just find ways to win, and they're at least doing it this year.
No, that's true, and I certainly understand that. And what I also understand here, too, is that, you know, I mean, this Patriots team has come back to earth now that the schedule has gotten much tougher for them. So there's also that. I mean, early on in the year, they played a UAB-level NFL schedule, and they took full advantage of it. And that's what you have to do. You know, in the NFL, you have to win the games you're supposed to win. That's how you wind up winning divisions, making the playoffs, all that type of thing. I think this is a game that, you know, Buffalo, obviously they're fully invested in this game. New England should be, since the division's on the line. I don't trust New England to get margin against any kind of competent team. I find that really difficult for them to do. And if they do it and they beat me, it is what it is. But there's a lot of problems with this New England team. And maybe they do figure it all out. They get that bye, you know, maybe for the AFC playoffs, but they got to prove it to me this week if they can cover a big number. And like I said, if they do, that's fine. That's why I'd play it in the contest and not, you know, with you know, my personal bankroll. But it's a game where what does concern me a little bit is that this line is moving down early in the week. Buffalo's the public side in a New England game. When the hell has that ever happened? So there is that consideration for me too.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't happen very often. I mean, in the last 18 years, I mean, probably count on one hand that Buffalo is the public side in this game.
What about the total? I mean, is there any chance this thing goes over in your estimation?
I'm certainly not going to bet it. I'm certainly on the under here, even with the line continue to drop. I mean, look at last week's Sunday Night Football game. Don't overthink it, even though it's you get scared of a really low total. I mean, that one wasn't going over, was it, between Pittsburgh and Buffalo? I get it. You got Tom Brady on the other side instead of Duck Hodges, but still, with New England's weapons, I mean, they're so compromised this year. I obviously don't see it, you know, being a high scoring game. I'd be stunned if both teams easily got into the 20s.
Yeah. And again, I mean, I mentioned this early in the week, Patriots are like, I think they're tied for second or tied for third in pass attempts, and they're 26th in yards per play with 5.0. I mean, they're just not efficient moving the football. So it could hurt them this week. It's probably going to hurt them in the playoffs. I mean, I guess we'll kind of wait and see about that. One thing I do want to ask you about here is I kind of start thinking about it a little bit. Week 16 and week 17 betting in the NFL is real tricky. I mean, do you historically have good success with these 2 weeks, or is it, you know, kind of tough to avoid some of those landmines of thinking a team is going to do one thing and they wind up doing another?
Hit and miss. You know, certainly the NFL in the recent years have taken care of the whole, you know, this team will have motivation by not, I mean, they used to not take it in consideration as far as the times, like, you know, hear me out. So, I mean, in the past, like 10, 15 years ago, if one team would win in the 1 o'clock window, I mean, you could either be alive or completely dead in the 4 o'clock window. And I thought Vegas was, you know, obviously slow to react to that. That has been taken away. They usually do a really good job of making sure that every game that really matters is played at the same time. Now, they can't do it for every game, but at least 80 to 90% of those scenarios have been taken away from the NFL. It's kind of smart, I guess, but certainly something that's not great for the bettors. Hit and miss, just like the industry. I mean, that's why a pro can feel really good about hitting 55%, but still in any other industry, that's hit or miss.
All right, so we go to game 475, 476, one of the most glaring sharp versus public splits on the board here for this week. So I want to get Brad Powers' opinion on Dallas and Philadelphia. If Dallas wins, the NFC East is theirs. If Philadelphia wins, they're in the driver's seat and would have to avoid disaster next week. What do you think about this one, where the line now is pretty much down to 1.5 market wide, with Dallas still a road favorite?
Yeah, I mean, you just got to ask yourself with a road favorite, flip the home away. I mean, earlier in the week, what was Dallas laying, like 2.5? I mean, you flip the home away, would you really be betting the Cowboys if Dallas was laying 8.5 at home? And I mean, just for those following along, I mean, obviously the 3 points of home field advantage, just flipping it. And even it still holds. I mean, would you be, you know, really willing to run to the window and bet Dallas -7.5 at home against Philly in an all-important game? I wouldn't. I know the 1.5, and you think Dallas is the better team. I get it. I see why this is a very public side, but I think it's remarkable to me. I thought the market was super anti-Dallas last week. It was incredible. I mean, with that line move and the fact that they're a home dog to the Rams, and now this week, I actually think the market's probably too high on Dallas in this instance. I thought the line would be closer to pick them. Clearly, Dallas is a better team, but I'm not sure they should be laying points on the road. I lean Philly.
Even, you know, Dallas -5.5 on a neutral. You know, would you say that Dallas is 5.5 points better than Philadelphia on a neutral?
No. I mean,
that's even kind of a tall ask.
Maybe
even
four at most.
Even with all of Philadelphia's injuries that they've dealt with throughout the entire season, and you've also got Dak Prescott who's hurt here. And unless that's just some gamesmanship from Jerry Jones and Jason Garrett, I don't think Jason Garrett's smart enough to pull off that kind of gamesmanship anyway. You know, Dak Prescott's hurt. You know, the sprained AC joint, we know quarterbacks play through that all the time. Not exactly a comfortable thing to have to deal with here. You know, in week 16, in the cold of Philadelphia, I'm sure it'll be cold. It always is everywhere in December. I agree with this line move, you know, and I like Philadelphia here. I'll probably be on them in the contest. Maybe 7.5 as a teaser play is something that you could kind of look at here a little bit as well. But man, I mean, this is one where, yeah, Dallas was overpriced. And hey, sometimes it happens, you know, sometimes it happens. And also too, you know, something that's kind of interesting. You talk about flipping the home field and, you know, what adjustments it does to the line and this and that. We've also found that home field is, you know, really not worth nearly as much as it used to be. It certainly wasn't worth much early in the year. It's been worth a little bit more here in the second half of the season. But you know, there's that part of it, too. I mean, you know, teams are good teams no matter where they're playing for the most part. Some teams are better at home than they are on the road. But this is one where I certainly don't trust Dallas going to a cold weather city with an injured quarterback in December. Not me. No way, no how.
I like it. No way, no how. Dallas, I mean, and also, you know, with everything on the line, there is no motivation issues here. I love those handicaps. I don't have to worry about it. I mean, obviously, Dallas win, they're in. I think that gets overplayed. So, I mean, if you're looking forward to week 17, if there's kind of a win and in situation, you better get jumping early on a win and in situation because you'll be paying a premium on those teams later in the week.
Well, we'll talk Kansas City, Chicago in a second, but I'm looking at the board here and I'm scratching a hole in my head about game 469, 470. Who the hell is betting Cincinnati into a road favorite at Miami?
I'm not. I'll have to dive into that one a little further. I do think Cincinnati's slightly better. I mean, I don't know. I mean, Miami's been okay. I mean, they're 7-3 against the number in the last 10 games. I know they didn't get it done last week, but they still led at halftime. Cincinnati, you know, this deceiving score last week with the fact that they were -5 in turnovers. But I certainly don't think Cincinnati's that much better than Miami, not to the point where they're a road favorite. So,
I mean, this is a vacation game for Cincinnati, right? Like, you're not playing for shit. You're going out to the club Saturday night. You know, you don't care. I wouldn't think so.
I would think so, but I mean, you know what? I'll have to look. There was some speculation that AJ Green was going to play, but I mean, come on. I mean, he's going to be rusty, and how much can he be really, really worth?
Yeah, no, that's true. Shitty game, but weird line move, to say the least. All right, one more game here to talk about. Sunday Night Football, 479, 480, Kansas City and Chicago. This one's ballooned all the way up to 6 here, with the total coming down from 45 to as low as 44 in the market, mostly 44.5 across the board here. Can you take the Bears getting 6 here, or is it the Chiefs?
Oh, I think it's the under more for me. I really like the improvements I'm seeing from the Kansas City defense. I mean, their last 4 games are only allowing 11 points per game, and they're starting to get it under Steve Spagnuolo, their new defensive coordinator. Prefer the under here, but I'm certain, again, you flip it. I mean, you lay in 12 with Kansas City in Arrowhead against Chicago. I'm not. I know it's a very public side, and Kansas City, you know, certainly has looked the part here recently, but I'm not laying 6 on the road here. I would lean Bears, but I'd much prefer the under.
Something I'm kind of interested in, and again, I just thought of it now. It's frustrating not to have this information in front of me because I think of stuff on the fly, but Andy Reid against Matt Nagy. You know, he's one of his proteges there. You know, I wonder what's that angle look like, you know, with Andy Reid and the success that he has against guys that are branches of his coaching tree. That's something I'm kind of curious to take a little bit more of a look at. I want to say this, though. Here's my question. Just taking this game out of the equation here, what would you say if I said Kansas City wins the AFC?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, obviously, they're going to have to go through Baltimore, but I think they can. I mean, the defensive improvements that they've shown, and I also, you know, I know those games have been close between the two teams the last couple of years, but again, I think Kansas City defensively is as good as they've been in a while here. And, you know, Pat Mahomes was, you know, he was compromising, you know, not only missing the games, but he played 2-3 games less than 100%. So I think it's a little deceiving here as far as I think finally with this number this week, Kansas City's starting to get the respect that they deserve in the marketplace. I still think Baltimore is the better team, but not, I don't think it's a huge gap. I think, you know, on a neutral, I certainly wouldn't lay a field goal with Baltimore. I think they're only about, you know, in between that 1 to 2 point range better than Kansas City at this point.
And assuming the weather is not bad in Baltimore, how good would that be as an AFC championship game?
Really good. It'd be nice to see. I mean, somebody other than the Patriots, what have they made, 7 or 8 in a row AFC championship games?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that sounds about right. So, yeah, I'm that's what I'm hoping for. You know, I'm hoping for a Baltimore-Kansas City matchup here in the AFC championship game. But in any event, I know Brad Powers is hoping to have a strong weekend in college football and the NFL. BradPowersSports.com is the website. What's going on over there right now, man?
Yeah, I talk about it each and every time I'm on this show. Why the heck not? It's called the Powers Picks Newsletter. And if you want to get covered on the first 17 bowl games, I have a write-up and a pick on every one of those, including my early top bowl pick. It doesn't go until December 27th. So you can check out the Powers Picks Newsletter. You can check out the past issues just to see what I'm all about for free. Download those for free. If you like what you see and you want to sign up for the rest of the year, whether it be the last couple weeks of the NFL regular season, you get a pick on all 39 bowl games. Plus, on top of that, you got the NFL playoffs. It's just $49 for the rest of the season. You go to BradPowersSports.com.
And as always, make sure you follow Brad on Twitter at Brad Powers and the number 7. Brad, always a pleasure, man. Love your insight. Love chatting with you here on the show. It's one of the greatest hours of my week. So thank you so much for that, man. And we'll talk to you again next week.
All right, man. Sounds good. Talk to you next week.
There you go. There's Brad Powers, professional handicapper over at BradPowersSports.com, at Brad Powers and the number 7 on Twitter. Coming up on our Friday edition of Bang the Book Radio, we'll do our Week 16 Westgate Super Contest selection segment with my picks for the Super Contest and the Circa Million. And we'll also hear from Brent down at DSI Sportsbook with this week's version of the odds report, some thoughts on sharp money in the college football and the NFL betting markets. That'll do it for me. Thank you so much for listening, everybody, and I will talk to you again tomorrow.